Well, welcome again to the Ted Barolo Show, broadcasting live from Germany, from Frankfurt, same place we called from last night. So hopefully we're going to have another good show tonight with another good internet connection. Austin, how are you doing tonight?
Doing pretty good, bud. Just getting some stuff together. Glad it's Friday and, you know, ready to do another show.
Okay. Well, I got some interesting little statistics that I found on dreaming and consciousness from psychology that'll make people think a little bit tonight. I want to start off with something a little bit different tonight than this exceedingly negative news. But I did speak to two people, a guy from Afghanistan today, and I spoke to another man who was in the military for almost 30 years, and he's retired. He's working in Germany now. They both have some interesting things to say. We'll start off with this, though. He talks about psychology and your mind and your thought. When someone misses you, listen to this. When someone misses you, there's an 80% chance that they will appear in your dreams. So if you miss me, Austin, there's an 80% chance you're going to appear in my dream.
That's crazy.
Is that neat or what? We're talking about the holographic matrix that we're in. Here's another one. Losing your phone triggers the same response as a near-death experience in many people. How pathetic is that? God, what does that say about all of us now? Next one, your brain feels rejection and catalogs it as pain. That's good. Singing reduces anxiety and depression. You can ask my 12-year-old who's with us on the trip all about that. It is truly better to give than to receive, but the best feeling in the world is to give anonymously and have someone find out. That's kind of cool. Music directly affects your perception of the world. That's absolutely a fact. Chocolate releases the same chemical in the body as love. Wow, about that. Your unconscious mind sees and knows before you do. Repeat that. Your unconscious mind sees and knows before you do. The internet is considered an addiction and may be added to the list of mental illnesses. I can believe that. You can create the illusion of progress to motivate yourself. Your most vivid memories are likely wrong because you're remembering the last time you had the memory, not the actual incident. I thought that was interesting. People tend to be more honest when they're tired. Your brain is most creative when it's tired. 80% of the conversations you engage in are in complaining. I believe that. Our capacity of closeness to other human beings maxes out at approximately 150 people. So after about 150 people, if you're a pastor in a church, you're not going to be close to your people is what it's saying, which is about right. And here's another one. It's better to keep quiet. Once you announce your life goals, in many cases, you lose the ability to achieve them. I disagree with that one, totally. Everyone has a favorite song, and that song is directly linked to an emotional event from your past. I have songs that I remember all the way back to my first year and second year of college. Just about half the entire world's population suffers from anxiety, depression, substance abuse, or a combination of both. Half of the population of the planet, Austin. That's awful. Of course, if I lived in Uganda, I would probably lay around being depressed all the time, too. God, no hope for anything down there in those places. People who become Christians or practice spiritual methodologies actually lower their stress dramatically from people who don't. That is absolutely true. I know that's fact. Ignorant people believe they are more intellectual than they really are, whereas the most intellectual people underestimate their own abilities. At the age of 16, 80% of the people have already met the person they are going to marry. The human brain cannot create faces, so if you dream of someone you've never met, you've seen them at least once, if only for a split second. Depression is the result of overthinking by creating problems that never existed. There's a really good book out. It's called How to Start Living and Stop Worrying by I think it was Dale Carnegie, I think. I'm not sure. I think it was Dale Carnegie. And it was a phenomenal book. When you dream, your physical body is paralyzed. I've experienced that before. All right, Austin, let's do some news. What you got going on?
Yeah, a few different things over here. A high school, Roosevelt High School in Chicago now, basically the students are starting a boycott of the cafeteria food. They've basically had enough of it. They said rotten pears, burned pizza, and fat-filled chicken patties and burgers are just some of the unappetizing, unhealthy lunch items that are being served there now. Starting on Wednesday, they started a boycott. They launched a petition demanding that the lunch offerings be improved to some reasonable extent. And one of the people that came in there apparently said now that the food they're feeding them is worse than prison food, which I don't doubt. I've gotten multiple phone calls in the past couple months. One just the other day of a lady that had her daughter in a college. It was a smaller college, though, a local college, and she said the cafeteria food is horrendous. She said it's absolutely horrible. It's like the cheapest slop you could physically even purchase. Most of the stuff you wouldn't even feed to a dog. And that's what they're always feeding the kids on a lot of these food plans, just because it's cheap, it's simple, and it's easy to mass produce a lot of it. But that's one of the reasons why we're seeing such an increase in gastrointestinal problems, digestive issues, health problems, is because almost all this food is just completely saturated with GMOs and high fructose corn syrup and hydrogenated oil. So it's definitely something that, you know, everybody needs to be aware of. Another one, too, everybody really needs to be aware of, especially in really vaccine-aggressive states, is the new refusal to vaccinate document, which is created by the CDC now. This document is now being used to overcome vaccine awareness. It is unlikely that physicians have any idea what they're asking their patients to sign. But basically what it is, it's essentially a signed confession. So please read it and understand what you are signing if you plan on signing it. No parent should sign this document unless they are interested in being charged with neglect or intentionally causing harm. The document, if signed, can be used to have your children removed from your custody. It was created to stand up in court. This is why it requires the parent's signature to be witnessed. It's called the refusal to vaccinate document. And they're bringing it up now repeatedly in schools, pediatrician offices, doctor's offices, all over the place. If you say, no, I don't want to have my child vaccinated, their next response is, okay, that's fine. You just need to sign this vaccination refusal document. And most people are just like, okay, that's cool, easy enough. But what you're doing is you're actually building a case against yourself when it goes to court, if it goes to court, for them to essentially take your children from you and put them in protective services, because you're signing a document saying that you're not going to vaccinate your kids and putting your signature on it. So it's very, very important. If you guys see about this, hear about this, know anybody that has been exposed to this, to really read it and make sure you understand what you're signing before you sign it, because it could cause some really serious ramifications in the future. What do you think about that, Deb?
Well, what I always tell people is this: don't sign anything. You know, just don't sign it. You know, how many times you've heard me say that? I'm not signing that. And I mean, I've trained you that for the last 27 years. Don't sign it. Because once you engage and you sign it, you can no longer say you were unaware of it. You have no plausible denial. You have nothing. You have no recourse. And so I wouldn't sign it. Just tell them, so I'm sorry. You got my verbal, no, we're not doing it. So that's the end of it. They insist that you sign it, get another doctor. That's what I always tell folks. But, you know, this whole thing is ridiculous with the way they actually get us to do things that we do things to ourselves by signing our signatures. I remember my mom taught me that a long time ago, and so did my dad. You basically don't sign anything unless it's like a matter of life and death. I remember years ago, my sister had power of attorney over my mom, and I think you were with me, Austin. And I believe you were with me. And my sister put my mom in a nursing home, which she should have never done. And I'll never forget, my mom was completely lucid. She was running a business and had cottages and everything else. And she was like, you know, 85 years old. She was doing great. But she fell and broke her foot from an osteoporotic fracture. And then rather than leaving her at home to heal, my sister decided with the power of attorney to have my mother admitted into the hospital. I fought it like crazy and couldn't get it stopped. Not the hospital, but we had to figure out what was going on with the hospital. Then the nursing home. And what happened is they started just started medicating her immediately as soon as she got to the nursing home. But what was crazy about all of it is that when my mom was in there and they checked her in the first day, I actually brought her over there. Actually, they brought her from the hospital over, from the ambulance or the escort or the transport vehicle. And I remember I went into the nursing home. They said, we have to have you sign a few papers. And I said, why do I have to sign papers? My sister has power of attorney. I wouldn't even have my mom here. And I said, and I'm not going to be responsible for any bills that my mother incurs here because she has, you know, plenty of money in the estate for her to take care of it along with Medicaid. They said, oh, no, you're not responsible for any bills at all that you have in the nursing home while your mother's here. And I said, okay, great. So I sat down, and there was literally a 2 or 3 inch stack of paper they wanted me to sign. I mean, almost every single thing required a signature. And the very first thing on top said, in the event that Medicaid or the estate does not pay for your mother's nursing home, I hereby assume full liability and responsibility. And they said, please sign this. And I looked at the lady and I said, I told you I wasn't going to be responsible for that. And she goes, that doesn't mean what it says. It really doesn't mean that at all. And I looked at her and I said, you must be an idiot. I said, because I'm certainly smarter than this and I know better than this. I said, if I take this piece of paper to a court of law in front of a judge and you have my signature on it saying that I'm responsible for the bill, I'm going to be paying the bill. I said, you can forget it. My mom is completely lucid. My sister has powers of attorney. I don't even want my mother here. You can deal with it yourself. And I walked out. And see, and that's what people need to realize, Austin. They need to have resolve, and they need to take responsibility for not signing things like that. But let me tell you what happened this morning. We were having breakfast here at the hotel in Frankfurt, and we started talking to the cook, a chef who was cooking breakfast omelets. And he was a very, very nice black gentleman and great guy, military man. And he was been in the military, I guess, probably 30 years. And he was probably around 50 is what I'm thinking. And I was talking to him for a few minutes. And he said to me, we started talking about what was going on in Germany. And he says, well, the biggest reason we're having all of these rapes in Frankfurt. And I said, what do you mean rapes in Frankfurt? He goes, oh, Frankfurt is just loaded with rapes now. These women are being raped left and right. And these children are being raped left and right from all of these Syrian, these refugees coming in from these other countries. And he goes, do you know the biggest reason we have it? I said, yes, Angela Merkel. He goes, that's absolutely right. We have a woman who's done this to the other women. And he was talking to me. Then he looked at me. He goes, well, let me ask you a question. Have you ever heard of Alex Jones? And, you know, and Alex has said many times on his show that he has a huge following in the military, especially overseas. Well, this guy basically verified that for me today. And he said that he's awake, and he said the German people have been trained like, you know, like lab animals. I guess they learned that out of the University of Leipzig with their problem action solution. And Wilhelm Wundt, you know, and so what ended up happening is we talked for a little while, then he had to get back to work. And then I talked to another guy today. He also works at the hotel, and he is out of Afghanistan. And he said that Afghanistan has become the number one production for poppy in the world, and that they're bringing in huge amounts of opium to the United States up through Afghanistan, and the military troops are basically guarding the poppy in Afghanistan. Remember, he's from Afghanistan. He still has family there. And then what was interesting, he said the migrant crisis is completely destroying Germany. Now, remember, this guy's Muslim. He's out of Afghanistan. I said, what do you mean? He goes, my daughter can't even go to tennis lessons anymore. She can't go to the swimming place anymore. She can't do anything anymore. The gymnasiums are all closed. They've all been turned into refugee centers all over Germany, and all of the housing is being taken. She starts telling me all of the stuff that's going on with these refugees, and he goes, it's an absolute nightmare for us here. We don't know what to do. They're destroying the very fabric of our culture and the very fabric of Germany. This is a man who's a Muslim who's talking about the other Muslims that are coming in from Syria. I thought the listeners would really, really find that interesting. So it's really, really happening here, Austin. And then I told him about the borders being closed and all that kind of stuff, and he said that he had heard they had been closed also. So little by little, people are beginning to realize what's going on here. I've added several people to our email list so they know to listen to the show. And see, the sad part about all of this is that, you know, you and I are like a voice in the wilderness crying out for somebody to listen. And I'm so glad that we have literally thousands and thousands of people now listening to the show every day, because they know that we're going to tell them the truth. You know, when we ever have, if we have another major news story that breaks around the world somewhere and I have the ability to get there, I'll have to do the same thing again. And I kind of set a precedent, which I don't really mind as long as I've stayed for 2 weeks. I won't do that again. It's too long. But the reality is, it's a sad situation that we have, Austin, and it's not getting any better. And if we don't learn as Christians that there are opportunities that we need to take advantage of as far as calling our congressmen, calling our pastors, and telling people the truth and getting this word out there, you know, shame on us, Austin. Shame on us if we don't do that.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right about that. Well, I mean, this whole massive influx of immigration definitely needs to be handled in a much more appropriate manner, because the way it's being done is not working at all. Now they're even saying Senator Ted Cruz and Senator Jeff Sessions want Obama to release the full immigration records of the San Bernardino shooters. They're stating now that they played a key role in the coming debate over funding the Syrian Refugee and Resettlement Program. This request comes on the CBS reports that one of the shooting suspects, who was Tashfeen Malak, apparently the guy's wife, she basically passed the Department of Homeland Security's counterterrorism screening as part of her vetting when she came in on her immigration visa. And I remember the federal government stated, remember last month they came out and said they have rigorous and effective screening processes in place that they make sure that nobody can get in that has any type of Islamic ties. Now it even emerged today that the married Muslim couple, or whatever they were in fact inspired by ISIS. The link was confirmed when the authorities found that both the individuals, Tashim Malik and Saeed Farouk, pledged allegiance to the ISIS leader, Abu Bakr Baghdadi, on Facebook during or leading up to the attack. The couple attempted to erase their digital footprints one day prior to the massacre, deleting emails, disposing of hard drives, and smashing their cell phones, law enforcement said. The female shooter is believed to have used a Facebook account registered under a fake name to upload her post praising ISIS activity. So, and the crazy thing is about, like, the mainstream media right now is not discussing this at all. They're still just saying this was, you know, an act of just, you know, regular terrorism, that it wasn't linked to any of this, you know, that it was a holiday shooting or a holiday party shooting. They won't even use the word Christmas. And it was a clear Christmas party. They've already stated that multiple times. Now, none of the mainstream media will even acknowledge it was a Christmas party. It was a holiday party. So this was definitely, obviously, very well planned. They did not, this was, now it's coming out, now this was not, you know, an accidental, you know, there was an argument, they went back in, which we already knew that. We knew that this thing had been set up. And apparently the FBI had already had these two under suspicious investigation before and did nothing of it. So there's definitely some things that need to change. But we do know now that pretty much this whole thing, they completely allowed it to happen, if not completely facilitated it, and these people were devout, extreme Sharia law Islamic believers. So it's, there's no question about it anymore now.
Well, no, it's just you know, the whole thing is just ridiculous. I mean, Glenn Beck got on a tear yesterday. I sent it to him, if you listen to it or not, and basically called, told Obama he was a stupid SOB.
I saw that.
I've never seen Glenn Beck talk like that before. I just thought, wow. I mean, that's just because Obama's running around not saying these people are radical Muslims. That they're just basically, you know, people that are grabbing guns and shooting people. Almost all of them have been Muslim shooters now. In fact, Ted Cruz reacts to the San Bernardino shooting. Now more than ever, Americans must be armed, he says. This is out of Breitbart. Cruz said, unfortunately, if both President Obama and Hillary Clinton is to consistently at every turn to look to weaken the constitutional rights of American citizens to bear arms, and in particular to undermine our constitutional rights to keep and to own arms, you don't get rid of the bad guys by getting rid of our guns. You get rid of the bad guys by using our guns, and rather than respond to radical Islam and terrorism with a commitment from the president to keep this nation safe, to kill the terrorists, instead, Barack and Hillary refuse to even utter the words, radical Islamic terrorism. You know, the crazy thing about all of this, Austin, is that, you know, you can't believe they're this stupid. They can't be this stupid. That's why Beck called him a stupid SOB, because nobody can believe that he's this stupid, because he's not. He's doing what he's being told to do. That's all he's doing. He's being, he's got the CIA running him. He's got the covert government running him. He's got the Council of Foreign Relations running him. All these people are telling him, the Bilderberg group are telling him what to do. And that's what he's doing. He's doing exactly what he's being told to do. And they know that they have to get rid of our guns before they can send an invading army into the United States, which is what their goal is going to be, to basically take us over and break us up into member states, the 13 FEMA camps or 10 FEMA camps, whatever they want to do, to FEMA regions. And the nuttiest thing about this is, if we don't stand in the aggregate against this and not let them take our weapons and just say no. And again, it's going to go all back down to the county sheriff that you live with. If the county sheriff allows it, it's going to be a mess, because the sheriff is the highest power in your county, period. You know, he really is. I mean, only the governor can unseat him. And so the sheriff is the main guy. Here's another one. 27 major global stock markets that have already crashed by double-digit percentages, in 2015. This is a pretty dire warning, actually, what's going on right now. This is from Zero Hedge. China is down more than 30%, Saudi Arabia down 26%, Germany down 13%, United Kingdom down 12%, Spain 15%, Brazil 22%. It just goes on and on and on. Peru down 40%. Ukraine down 45%, Morocco down 13%, Kenya down 27%, Thailand down 20%. And this is, we have not seen numbers like these since 2008. And that was, they were a precursor to the massive junk that happened to us in 2008. Junk bonds are starting to collapse all over the place. It says, but just like in 2008, a lot of people not heed the warning because they don't have the patience to watch the long-term trends play out. We live in a society where we expect constant gratification. We have instant coffee, video on demand, and 48-hour news cycles. If something does not happen immediately, most of us quickly lose patience. So a lot of people aren't realizing that we're basically getting ourselves set back up for another massive crash. The only difference is this time we've given the Federal Reserve so much autonomy, Austin. They're able to print so much digital currency and buy so many stocks and bonds and maintain everything with their pledge protection team that I'm not sure what they're going to do, because the gosh, they've already spent literally hundreds of billions, if not trillions of dollars, just in the silver and the gold market supporting that with their naked shorts. So it's kind of crazy when you stop and think about what they're doing and how they're manipulating almost everything now.
Yeah, you're dead on. I mean, a lot of people, you know, thought 2 or 3 years ago that the whole charade was going to come crashing down with the, you know, Federal Reserve monetary system and all the derivatives and the unlimited money printing that they're doing, and it's continued to go on. It keeps going on further and further and further. And I guess the way they're looking at it is, you know, they're on a high ride right now, so they're just going to roll it out until they can just milk every single penny and dollar out of the country. And essentially what they're doing is, like you were talking the other day, you know, with different corporations and blue stocks and all kinds of everything else, they're just taking all this funny money that they're printing up, you know, on digitized computers, and they're just buying real, true, hard assets, companies, land, buildings, property, whatever they want to acquire, and they're doing it with essentially fake money. They're just printing it in their backyard. Which, I mean, you know, if we do that, we go to prison.
Well, so they don't even have to print it anymore. Now they just digitize it. This is exactly what happened in the early 20s in the Weimar Republic. I remember I was there the other day in Weimar, where they signed the documents for the Republic. And it was interesting because what the international banking community did, and this is why Hitler hated him so much, is they stayed in front of the inflation curve. Because back then they couldn't digitize the currency because they didn't have that type of capability, so they had to print. And what they would do, if they knew they were going to inflate by 100 million Deutsche Marks in 1 week, they would take the 100 million Deutsche Marks first, and they would buy factories and blue chip stocks and gold and silver. This is what the bankers did, because they wanted to store their wealth in a place where it would stay stable. And then they would print the currency the following week, and then they do the same thing again. Before they print more, they print up some more for themselves, buy the blue chip stocks. That's one of the reasons that when Hitler took power, he nationalized all of the assets of the Rothschild-controlled central bank, because he knew that they had stolen all of these assets from Germany, because this is what they had done. They had basically printed up money from nothing, bought the hard tangible assets, and impoverished the German people. He knew they had done this. That's why he took and seized their assets. That's what needs to be done in the United States. The Federal Reserve, all of the assets from its member banks need to be seized and put back into a federal trust fund or whatever you want to call it for the American people to help, you know, finance the country, finance the debt, and finance everything. You know, if the thing about it is once we get rid of the funny money, also we have to, and we stop borrowing money to expand our M1 currency supply, there is no debt. You don't have to pay it back, and you don't have to pay interest on it. It's just stupid. The whole thing is this complete and total Ponzi scheme that started in 1913 and basically has taken over the entire world economy. It's like a giant vampire squid, I think Rolling Stone called it. And it's exactly what it has. It's suffocating the life out of everybody, and now they've pretty much broken the United States. There's nothing left. So now they want to break it up into its member states to control it more easily, and they can start doing the same thing all over again. They can start pulling in more debt, making more people higher and higher slave levels. They put us back into a feudal system, in which is we have lords and serfs, and if you're not a noble person, you lose all your rights. I remember that one movie, Austin, you and I used to watch it when you were a kid. There were a couple parts I made you close your eyes in. It was called Rob Roy with Liam Neeson. And I'll never forget, you know, he was being charged for something he didn't do. And finally, he gives his testimony to the Lord and says, "But I didn't do any of this." And the Lord goes, "No, I don't believe you. Hang him." And he says, "They say throw a neck around him, a noose around him, and they're going to hang him from this bridge right there." There was no trial. There was nothing. It was hang him. That was it. And see, that's what they want to go back to. They want to go back to just taking people's rights, taking their liberties, taking their lives, whatever they want to do, just like the Nazi Germans used to run around just shooting people they didn't like. I mean, the craziest bunch of stuff that you've ever seen happens when you give people so much authority and power like that. They go absolutely nuts with it. And what's the old adage that we've heard so many times, that absolute power corrupts absolutely? And that's the truth. And that's where our federal government has gone. It's gone to absolute power, and it's become absolutely corrupted, son.
Well, yeah, and that's why they know that unarmed civilians cannot protect themselves or resist against any type of tyranny. And that's why when you always hear the whole liberal montage where they're like, well, we don't want to take your rights away of hunting, you know, we're not worried about that. The thing about it is, man, there's nothing to do about the Second Amendment. Nothing was even relating to that Second Amendment to hunting. Hunting was a God-given right to be able to feed yourself and your family. And see, the liberals, they choose that language very carefully and intentionally because they're trying to reduce the Second Amendment to say it applies to hunting and target practices. It doesn't. The Second Amendment exists because our founding fathers knew very clearly that that day might come when Americans would need to defend themselves from internal or external enemies that were turning into a dictatorship. We saw that with Adolf Hitler. We saw it with Stalin and every other dictator that has rose to control their nation. And every time any type of dictator, what's the first thing they do? They disarm the populace. They have to do it. And unarmed people cannot defend themselves. What's interesting is there's a I pulled up an article the other day because, you know, I was saying there's roughly about 11 to 12,000 gun homicide deaths each year. Harvard University says that on average each year, 840,000 people are hospitalized from adverse reactions to legal prescription drugs from their doctors. And of those 840,000, almost 130,000 of those people die from legally prescribed medications. That is over 350 people every single day that die from something that is legally given to them by someone that they trust. And yet they want to sit here and try and point the fingers at law-abiding citizens and say, you guys don't need to own firearms. You have weapons of war. No, they don't have weapons of war. Weapons of war are nuclear bombs and surface air missiles. Those are weapons of war now. Small arms ammunition doesn't even compare to that type of weaponry anymore. It's not even remotely just related whatsoever at all. So when you hear them use words like that, and he's used it multiple times now as far as weapons of war. People don't need these weapons of war on the street. A semi-automatic AR-15 with a 30-round magazine, yes, that may still be a base of a standard-issue military rifle, but weapons of war, give me a break. That's making it way, way too overdramatic. But again, they have to brainwash the population on it. They know that there's a very, very, very little possibility that the United States government would ever have any type of success at disarming this country manually or against our will. It won't happen. They couldn't have the manpower to do it. They have to continue to do this over and over and over again with these shootings and blame it on something that follows their narrative. That way, if they do this to a point, majority of the population will want to be disarmed. They will call to be disarmed. They'll practically beg to be disarmed. And when it reaches that point, that's when everybody needs to get severely concerned about it. Because right now, shoot, there were several gun control measures proposed by the Democrats yesterday in the Senate, completely shot down. The White House continues to look at possible executive orders that would change the meaning of the existing gun laws to force all gun sales, even private ones, to go through the background check system, which is they've already said now that that's not even – it wouldn't even have prevented this type of shooting because most of the weapons that they have sold that were legally still pass background checks. You have to start looking at where these people were from and what they were doing and what they their whole reason for coming over here. Like I said yesterday with the sheriff in Arizona, you know, he already said, I want 250,000 armed citizens that are willing to carry weapons. Now we have Ulster County, which is about 2 hours north of New York City, he stated now, in light of recent events that have occurred in the United States and around the world, I want to encourage citizens of Ulster County who are licensed to carry a firearm to please do so. I urge you to responsibly take advantage of your legal right to carry a firearm to ensure the safety of yourself and others. Make sure you are comfortable and proficient with your weapon and knowledgeable of the laws in the New York State with regards to carrying a weapon and when it's legal to use it. We're not the only people saying this anymore now. This is two big-name sheriffs in 2 days now. And also, too, you had the Detroit Detroit Police Chief Craig. He came out and said the same thing now. This is starting to get widespread. People are starting to get traction with this, and people are starting to understand if you have the right to carry a gun, you better darn well take it right now, and you better use it if you need it, because this isn't a joke anymore, and you need to get proficient with it. That's why I really like he added that in here. Make sure you're comfortable and proficient with your weapon, and please carry a firearm if you can legally do so. That will stop a lot of this crap from happening again.
You know, Austin, if we're going to do hunting rifles, I'm okay with that. I'm going to go hunt some grizzly, and if I have to go hunt a grizzly bear that's about 14 feet tall and about 2,000 pounds, I'm going to pick a 50 caliber Barrett. I mean, that's a good hunting rifle.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Or I want my, you know, my SCAR Heavy with a 30-round magazine with my 308 ammo in it.
No,
you
want,
know what I mean?
I'm doing a grizzly bear. I want the 50.
You want the 50?
If we're going to hunt, we might as well hunt something big with something big. But,
well, I'll let you carry that big old thing up the mountain.
I'll sit there in the tree in a stand waiting for one to show up. Here we go. Here's something about truckers. There go the truckers. An unprecedented 59% plunge in November for heavy truck orders. This is, again, out of Zero Hedge. The rout beneath the relative calm of the market surface continues today as another sector has gotten crushed in reaction to the domestic and global collapse in trade. The spreading domestic manufacturing recession and the bursting of the commodity bubble, truckers and especially the heaviest Class 8 trucks, those with a gross weight of over 33,000 pounds, which make up the backbone of U.S. trade infrastructure and logistics, have completely collapsed, 59% in orders in November. I mean, that's kind of crazy when you stop and think about it. I mean, it's just getting worse and worse and worse. And, you know, it's just the sad part about it is, I mean, it doesn't have to be that way. And look at the car markets. Look at pickup trucks now that are $70,000 for a Chevy pickup truck. I mean, are you kidding me? For a high country? That's absolutely insane. In fact, here's another article. Auto loan madness continues as U.S. car buyers take on record debt. Lunatic financing terms. It goes, says, way back in June, we noted that auto sales had reached 10-year highs on record credit, record loan terms, and record ignorance. We based that assessment on the following set of Q1 data from Experian. The average loan term for new cars is now 67 months, a record. Average loan term for used cars, is 62 months, a record. Loans with terms from 74 to 84 months made up 16% of all used vehicle financing, a record. The average amount of finance for a new vehicle was $28,000, a record. The average payment for new vehicles was $488, a record. And the percentage of all new vehicles financed accounted for by less than 31.46% was a record. In short, the renaissance in U.S. auto sales is being driven by increasingly risky underwriting practices, and this has led directly to the securitization of shoddier and shoddier collateral pools and a return to the original-to-sell model that drove the housing bubble over a cliff in 2008. So what they're saying is that the car market is in a giant bubble, that your car is not worth $70,000 if you're driving a 2016 Silverado High Country. It's probably worth around $35,000, and the bubble has pushed it up, 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 up. And sooner or later, Austin, that bubble is going to pop, and people are going to be stuck in these extremely high loans, and they're not going to be able to walk away from those loans and trade those vehicles again. They won't be able to roll over that financing anymore.
No, it's crazy, too. I mean, I just realized that 84 months, that's a seven-year financing term. 7 years you're making that payment on that vehicle for. I mean, so what's happening is, too, is we're seeing the bubble with that, but we're also starting to see the inflation start to catch up with the Federal Reserve printing all this money. That's where you're starting to see a lot of prices for just normal goods are continuing to go up higher and higher and higher along with these vehicles. And the problem is, like you said, a lot of these vehicles are not worth that much, not to mention you're making these $400, $500, $600 a month payments on a vehicle for 7 years. 7 years. I mean, that's a really, really long time to have a payment on a vehicle. And, I mean, there's no end in sight when you buy it. I mean, it's like, oh, yeah, I'm 25 when I buy my truck. I'm going to be, you know, 32 whenever I pay it off. I mean, and what's happening is more and more people are seeing this. Now they're having to do this because people are getting more and more upside down in these vehicles. I've had multiple friends now that have been upside down in multiple vehicles. You know, and I'm not even talking, you know, like a couple $100s. I'm talking like $4,000 or $5,000 upside down in fairly new vehicles, 2010, 2012, upside down $4,000 or $5,000 in them. And it's like you said, they're trying to overblow this market like it's this really big market, and these trucks aren't worth it. People may be paying $70,000 for a new Duramax, you know, High Country right now, and they're nice trucks, they're awesome. But again, we're going to reach that point when people are going to be more concerned about feeding their family than spending that much money on a pickup truck. So, I mean, there's a lot of good vehicles you can get out there, and people got to learn, too, how to negotiate. That's also another issue I do have to say on that, is majority of people I run into, they don't negotiate to save their own life. It's ridiculous. The salesman says, well, the price on this thing with tax tag title and dealer prep and paint protection and interior protection and windshield wipers and lugs for your tires out the door, it's $40,000. And everybody goes, okay, $40,000, let's do it. And the truth is, you start haggling on them, you get a couple dealerships bouncing off of each other, you know, trying to push the numbers down, you probably get that car for $33,000, $34,000 out the door instead of paying these ridiculously inflated premiums that all these dealers want on these vehicles and all these stupid add-ons they put on that aren't worth anything. That's one of the reasons why people get so upside down, is they end up paying $2,000-$3,000 in add-ons on these cars, like paint protection for $7.99, and then all of a sudden they go back to trade it in, and the dealership laughs at you and goes, you're the idiot that paid $7.99 for paint protection. That's not in Kelley Blue Book. That's not in the Black Book. We're not putting that back in your car. And it's kind of funny at first, but then it's actually kind of sad when you see people really, really get hammered by these vehicle deals now.
Well, that's true. And then when you go back when something was wrong with the paint, they tell you that's exempted from the warranty. And
yeah, the best I always is you use the improper wash or wax, and you
that's
go,
right.
Well, I never even told you which one I have used. Oh, well, you used the one. If you didn't use, did you use the certified Mercedes-Benz wash and wax polish that's $400 a gallon? Well, no, I didn't use that. That's insane. Well, sorry, you voided your warranty on that. We're not going to cover that for you. It's almost a joke.
Well, and plus people need to realize if you're not going to drive the car past the warranty period, there's no reason to get an extended warranty on it. And also, if you do get stuck in an extended warranty, always remember if you trade that car while it still has an extended warranty on it, you are eligible for a refund on the balance not used. So if you spend $3,000 or $4,000 on extended warranty and you only keep the car for 1 year and you've got 3 years left, you've got like a $3,000 refund coming to you from the dealer. So don't let them play that game with you and not give you the money back for the refund for the warranty. That's really, really important. But I always tell folks, in most cases, if you really, really negotiate closely on a deal, you could trade pretty close every couple of years and never have a car go out of warranty. But you've got to buy the car right and do it right. In fact, I need to put a CD set together on that also to teach people how to do that, because that's something
that's
a skill
set. It
wouldn't
be a bad idea, because I feel so bad for so many people that have no idea what they're doing, and they always get screwed when they do that.
Well, they do, and I feel so bad for them. I remember years ago, because I've always been really good at that negotiation stuff, because Dad taught me, because, you know, he was a German farm boy, and they always, you know, he was like an old farmer that just always negotiated everything. And I remember the first few times he taught me how to do that, I was like 8 or 9 years old, and I was so embarrassed. I was like, I can't believe you're trying to negotiate a price. Just pay what they want. And he goes, well, no, you don't want to do that, son, because it's easier just to ask them for a discount if they're going to do it or they're not. And he goes, and so if they don't want to do it, you don't have to buy it. He goes, never want something so badly that you're willing to pay whatever for, because you're going to always pay too much.
Yep.
So always be willing,
yep,
to always be willing to walk away from the deal. And I've taught you that since you were a kid. And as I dragged you to multiple car dealership lots buying stuff, right? And so I've learned over the years that you've got to be willing to walk away. If they're not, if they'll walk away from your deal, that means you've got a skinny deal, okay? But if they're pushing you to do the deal, you got to be careful, especially with used cars. It's the worst. Let me read this. This is interesting. This is a Syrian refugee vetting assigned to the VA. Now the VA is saying that the Syrian refugees vetting is going to have a 10-year backlog. Duffel blog image from multiple sources in Washington. Voting swift. And this may be a satire, I don't know, but it sounds pretty good. That sounds about right. Voting swift, efficient action on Syrian refugee admissions. The Obama administration last month assigned the Department of Veteran Affairs responsibility for vetting the refugees. according to sources. Really, it's a perfect fit, said one White House official. The VA is already used to dealing with dangerous, unstable people looking for jobs. And Secretary of Veterans Affairs Robert McDonald welcomed the responsibility. Like our mission statement proclaims, we are here to care for him who shall have borne this battle, and for his widow and his orphan, Donald said. Well, except in this case, it'll probably be a Syrian refugee. well, maybe just girl orphans at that. Anyway, we are fully committed to serving and honoring these serving few. Once we finish the processing their applications, to date, the VA has successfully vetted one Syrian, Dr. Bassa Hosani, a pharmacist who fled from Iraqi last month, has had mixed results with the department. Obviously, this is a satire. I asked for a house, but they gave me a bottle with horse tranquilizers. No prescription. They just said, take the pills, go home. This is hilarious. None of the other 10,000 refugees have been vetted, only one last month, and none properly housed. But according to records received through a Freedom of Information Act request, the VA employees in the new refuge See, office have received $250,000 in bonuses so far. A senior official in the department volunteered to look into the matter, but told friends that he would probably need to become a GS-15 to properly conduct the investigation. You know, and it's so sad that, you know, this is obviously satire, but the thing about it is, it's so true. The VA is so inefficient and so poorly run and so managed that these soldiers that are coming in now with all these traumas and all this post-traumatic stress syndrome, they can't even get proper attention, Austin. And now the VA is going to be taking on more and more and more responsibility. What a joke. This whole thing's a disaster.
Well, no, now the VA is even trying to mandate, you know, that veterans can't own firearms or else they're going to lose all of their, you know, benefits and disability pay. Now they're also saying that they're trying to mandate vaccinations as well. That if you don't get all your scheduled vaccinations, you're going to forfeit your disability and lose your coverage as well. So, I mean, it's just, all it is just, it's like you said before, it's all about making us slaves. That's really what it comes down to, is they don't want a free country. And the United States is the last hope as far as on the horizon of being a really true free country. And we still have the ability to get back to what we were, but we have to get the population, the majority of the population of this country, to wake up and get their heads out of the sand and understand that, like I said before, this isn't a game. These guys are playing for blood. This is not a game. We do not want this to escalate into violence. We want to handle this peacefully and bring it back to the way it's supposed to be done, peacefully. And there's only a little bit of time left to do that. And if people start waking up and start getting their friends on board and their family on board and getting people more and more awake all around the country, saying, we don't want to take this anymore. This is not right. We're not going to put up with it anymore. Yeah, remember, there's over 300 million of us in the United States. We're not a small country. There's a lot of people in this country and a lot of really educated, really well-armed people in this country that can make a huge difference by just speaking the words and making it happen without ever escalating it to violence. So I urge everybody to please, please get everybody on board that you can. Wake everybody up, however you need to do so. Get them on board with what's going on.
You know, Austin, I think we need to call the National Rifle Association and have them become our sponsor. We do more to promote gun safety and gun awareness than any other show I've ever heard.
hey, well, and by the way, this show is brought to you by healthmasters.com.
That's right.
Since we're on advertisement, our advertisement break right now.
Well, that's right. We're at healthmasters.com. Sign up for our newsletter. I hope you're enjoying the show tonight. This is my last show that we're doing out of Europe. I'll be flying home on Monday, so it'll be the end of the shows for me here. So I've had a blast doing them here. It's been a lot of fun. I've gotten to see a lot of stuff and talk to a lot of people and learn a lot of stuff. And a lot of stuff that we thought was really happening isn't happening here. A lot of stuff that we were told is happening actually is happening here. So it's been a mixed bag as far as what's been true and what's not been true. But it's been good nonetheless as far as being here and learning from the people here what's happening. Here's another article. Rand Paul and Hillary. Rand Paul comes out and says that Hillary Clinton and Marco Rubio, which I can't stand him, he's in Florida, have the same foreign policy. This is out of Breitbart. Hillary Clinton and Marco Rubio have basically the same foreign policy. They believe in regime change, and they think that somehow it's going to be better over there. It's going to be better over there when we change the regime out. But what has happened, every time we've toppled a secular dictator, we've gotten chaos and the rise of radical Islam. because of Marco Rubio and because of Hillary Clinton, because they toppled Gaddafi in Libya. Now we have a failed state, Paul explained. This is from Rand Paul, and saying that now a third of the people in Libya pledge allegiance to ISIS, and America is more of a risk of an attack. He also posed making border security more stringent so that we can keep people from coming in to attack us, Paul said of Rubio. So here's the thing about this is, Rubio is not a conservative Republican. I mean, guys, the guy, look at his voting record. I mean, he and Hillary are like out of the same cloth. I'm sure they're both probably part of the New World Order. I mean, there's no way that Rubio had that flaming star go that fast, that high, and not be involved with political, political gymnastics in Washington. There you go. That's a good way of putting it. And the craziest thing is this, is that, you know, Rand Paul's calling him out. So Rand Paul, he's kind of boring when you listen to him, but he makes a lot of sense with what he says. I like Rand. Okay, the only thing I really don't like that he did is in the last election, he supported Romney in the summer rather than supporting his father. I thought that was really, really wrong. But, you know, he may have done that as to do a favor for somebody in Washington. I don't know, because obviously Ron Paul was never going to get elected or get the nominee. But still, throwing his dad under the bus like that, I thought was pretty sorry. But again, he's one of the only ones there telling the truth, so I'm going to have to support him. Obviously, he won't get the nomination. We know that, but at least he's out there in the debates bringing up stuff that nobody else wants to talk about, making the people in America listen. Here's another article on a huge, this is a huge article, by the way. This is from Natural Society. It's Monsanto is going to trial for crimes against humanity in The Hague in the Netherlands to the International Criminal Court. Finally, Monsanto, the U.S.-based transnational company responsible for introducing multiple genetically modified crops and numerous toxic chemicals into our environment, including saccharin, aspartame, polystyrene, DDT, dioxin, Agent Orange, petroleum-based fertilizer, recombinant bovine growth hormones, Roundup, glyphosate, Lasso, an herbicide used in Europe, BT toxic plants, and more, will have to answer to the world. The Organic Consumers Association, the IFOAM, International Organics, Regeneration, this lists all these other people. Again, millions against Monsanto, along with dozens of global food, farming, and environmental justice groups, announced at the United Nations conference held recently in Paris that an international court of lawyers and judges will assess Monsanto's criminal liability for their atrocious acts. The court in The Hague, Netherlands, will use the UN's guiding principles on business and human rights developed in 2011 to assess damages for Monsanto's acts against humanity and life and on the environment. Wow, Austin. We'll see what happens with that one. It'll probably be in court for 25 years.
Oh, I'm sure that's not going to be one of those plea bargain down or, you know, they make a deal. That's going to be something they're going to fight pretty hard. But that's awesome. I mean, that's really, really good to hear. Like we said before, whenever we hear about this stuff happening, like the attorney that I was talking about yesterday in Washington State that's going against, you know, Monsanto and the vaccination programs and all this stuff, and now we see this lawsuit with Monsanto, again, that means we're showing progress. That means we're pushing forward. That means people are starting to wake up and realize that they don't want to be poisoned anymore. They don't want to be shot up with aluminum and eat GMO foods and have all this toxic chemicals put on their food on a regular basis. I mean, the glyphosate now should be a given. We already know how toxic this stuff is. There's absolutely no question left in anybody's mind that glyphosate is not healthy for human consumption, yet they're still spraying it on plants. They're still spraying it on crops. And it's all it is getting worse because they're having to spray more and more Roundup because the weeds are becoming more and more Roundup resistant because of all the GMO and glyphosate that's spreading off to them. So, yeah, that's really good, man. I'm excited to see that. I'll definitely keep an eye out on that, too. Here's another article.
Interesting is that, you know, I really believe a large portion of the autism, I believe a lot of it's from the immunizations, but I also believe a lot of it's from the glyphosate. And some of the research is now starting to prove that and show that. Because glyphosate is so toxic to human beings, son, and it's so poisonous to the central nervous system. And it's just these kids are basically, they don't have a chance. By the time they start school, they're getting fed all of this wheat that has been sprayed with all of this glyphosate a week before it was harvested as a desiccant. And what's happening is they're soaking the food down in Roundup before they're feeding it to us, the goyim. And what's happening is we're being poisoned. I mean, that's what's causing all of these chronic intestinal disorders. I believe it's a big link to the tide with the autism. All of it. You know, I believe that immunizations are important, you know, as far as their tie-in to autism. I believe that. I believe they should be avoided. But I also believe that the glyphosate is one of the primary factors. Okay, we're almost out of time. Let me finish with this. NATO warships are entering the Black Sea to ensure peace and stability in the region. Remember, this is right in Russia's backyard. Sputnik News. Three NATO frigates and a U.S.-guided missile destroyer have entered the Black Sea in what the U.S. Naval Command described as part of an ongoing effort to enhance regional stability and as a sign of support for NATO member states. Russia media reported on Friday. The American-guided missile destroyer USS Ross is accompanied by three missile frigates in the Black Sea. And, you know, it's just kind of crazy. I mean, Moscow is now welcoming any effort to fight ISIS as the UK joins and the US-led bombing campaign starts. The Kremlin said it would welcome any extra help in the fight against the terrorist group ISIS after Britain started combat sorties in Syria. Moscow observed, however, that it is the only foreign party acting in Syria legitimately. We continue to welcome any effort aimed at fighting terrorism and an Islamic State in particular. We believe that such efforts are coordinated as part of a single coalition. They become much more effective. This is according to what Russia is saying. So, you know, it's interesting to me that Putin wants Russia to become the world's, you know, peacekeeper at this point. I mean, it's just unbelievable that we've got this these Kabbalist Luciferian bankers that are running our country that are basically trying everything they possibly can to enslave humanity, and Putin is sitting there as the former communist and head of the KGB going, I don't think I'm going to let you guys do that right now. I'm not going to let you do that to us right now. And he's the only person standing in their face right now, Austin. I tell you what, who in the world would have thought, especially people my age, that Russia would have been the hero and the United States would have been the tyranny and the tyrant that's running around the world destroying civilizations and destroying people and murdering millions of people in uncalled for wars. It's just, whole thing's just nuts. It's all backwards.
It is. It's become completely backwards. I mean, look at the way Russia's completely against GMO food now. I mean, they've completely banned any production or importation of GMOs into their country. That should make a strong statement to anybody right there that's awake.
But Putin wants Russia to become the world's biggest exporter of non-GMO food. In fact, this is what Russia Today said. Russia would be, could become the world's largest supplier of ecology clean and high or quality organic food, said President Vladimir Putin on Thursday. He also called on the country to become completely self-sufficient in food production by 2020. I mean, think about what he's saying. He wants to feed the world organic while the rest of the world is trying to destroy us. But remember what Sabbatai Levy said back in the 1600s. He said that he wanted to turn everything on the planet that God made to be good upside down and make it bad. That's his goal. That's the goal of the Luciferian agenda. And that's what they're doing. They're trying to destroy every single thing that God made. We love you guys. We appreciate you. Thanks for listening to me as I've been broadcasting out of Europe. Austin, thanks for being here to help me get this stuff done when I couldn't get to the doggone Skype. I appreciate you guys so much. Thank you for your supporting of Health Masters. We appreciate you. And listen to Austin on Sunday night. He'll be live. God bless.
Yep. You guys have a safe weekend.